Chapter 18. The Dread Wolf. No. Fenris did not decide to speak. The word just boiled out of him. Everyone looked at him. It was a shock, somehow. Even now, after all this time, there was a part of him that did not expect to be listened to. Not in a company like this. But they all looked. Solas impatient now. Hawk with a sharp nod. And Varric with his rare serious expression. Merrill, big-eyed, and Lavellan, calm. Calm, though there was a fey gleam in her eyes, and the beginnings of a wild, fierce smile hovered about her lips, and the orb glowed in her marked hand. Fenris moved forward to put himself in her way. She would have to go past him to give Solas his prize. She would have to go through him. At least he knew he would not stand alone. Hawk and Varric would help him, he thought. Not Merrill. No, not for this. But let two be enough. It would not be. Not against three such mages. There was no question what Merrill would choose here. He met Lavellan's eyes and did not look down. He had thought that cool look showed a steady heart, and it was true. She would be as steady about this madness as anything else. Lavellan looked, and Fenris glared. And finally she raised one eyebrow.
Well?
She said.
I said no,
said Fenris. Magic flashed through him. The lyrium in his skin flared to life again. Lavellan tilted her head slightly.
I don't want to fight you,
she said.
You already made your choice,
Fenris said. Light flickered, reflected oddly from the golden mosaic floor, the dark glass of seven great mirrors.
I will not let you carry it out.
Lavellan looked at him for a little longer. Then she said,
Why not?
Inquisitor, said Solas.
No,
said Lavellan, and some of the wildness was gone from her expression, replaced with a more familiar, calm curiosity.
I want to know.
Fenris swallowed. He had not expected that. If he had been in her place, if it had been Hawk asking madness of him.
Make your case, the Inquisitor said. I'm listening.
You already know, said Fenris. You should already know. If you meant what you said on Sundermount, if you were listening to me, you should already know. Look at them. Think.
He does not understand, Inquisitor, said Solas. Not through any failing of his. He cannot understand. None of them can. It is the nature of this world. But you are different.
Lavellan said,
Solas?
And then there was a flicker of a smile.
Or do you prefer your other name?
Solas sputtered.
Solas, Lavellan decided. Please, let me think.
Fenris did not expect Solas to subside at that, but he did. He suspected he did not understand them at all, these two mages, thousands of years apart and yet somehow one in mind. He did not understand them, and they understood each other all too well. Hawk and Varric were taking advantage of this opportunity to silently position themselves for battle.
Keep them talking,
Hawk mouthed at him. Fenris could not see Merrill at all, which was worrying. He could not help but feel he was the wrong person for this role. He was no maker of easy speeches. Hawk should have done it, or Varric. But Fenris was the one who had spoken, and Fenris was the one Lavellan was looking at. Solas stood silent and watchful close by. His eyes, as he looked at Lavellan, were hungry, and Fenris could not have guessed whether the hunger was for the orb or for the woman. He had yet to speak. He had to keep them talking. Perhaps there was a chance.
Look at them, he said again. I beg of you, look at what they are, not what the Dalish dreamed them to be. Look at him.
Lavellan looked for a long moment.
We were immortal, she said, after a moment. We were strong. We had magic, and cities of our own, homes of our own. They weren't attacked every time we stayed too long in one place. We weren't hunted and hated by the humans. Our people weren't stuffed into slums in their cities or kept as slaves in their empires. Solas bowed his head. Why not change things? Anything would be better than this. In Arlathon, we were beautiful, Lavellan said, looking up at the carved, proud faces, ivory and gold. In Arlathon, we were free.
They were free, Fenris snapped. They were the ones who were strong. They were the ones who possessed all the power you dream of. Do you want to be one of them? Do you aspire to Godhead, Inquisitor? No doubt your lover would be pleased to bestow it on you. You heard him. You are different. You are special. The Great Inquisitor is nothing like the rest of us.
For the first time, Lavellan faltered.
What difference is there between them and the Magisters who made the Blight? Fenris demanded. What difference is there between him and Corypheus?
Solas coughed. For one thing, we succeeded.
Lavellan's eyes went wide. Fenris opened his mouth and then closed it again.
I don't know about anyone else, but for me this conversation is raising a lot more questions than it's answering,
Varric said. His crossbow bolt was strained on Solas's head. Out of the corner of his eye, Fenris could see that Hawk was covering Lavellan. Solas's eyes narrowed.
This is not a conversation, he said. This is a waste of time.
He turned to Lavellan.
Venon, I have not deserved it from you, but I still must ask you to trust me. Everything I have done for the Elven. For all of us. For our people.
Everything? Said Lavellan. She nodded to the seven mirrors. Even this. This was you, wasn't it? The Dalish did get that right, at least.
Yes, said Solas. Even this. It was a mistake I made with the best of intentions. Do you think I do not know we have suffered for it? There is no one who knows what we have lost as well as I do.
His face twisted.
In my pride, I set out to change the world, and instead I destroyed it. You must believe me. This cracked, spiritless reality. This was never what I wanted.
That's what happens when you set out to change things, said Hawk, softly, dangerously.
Things change.
Solas barely seemed to hear him.
I will put it right. I am the only one who can, and you are the only one who can help me. Please.
He reached out. Fenris stiffened, but the mage did not try to seize the orb. He was reaching for Lavellan's arm, a pleading touch. Lavellan said,
So if destroying everything created this world, would bringing it all back destroy this world?
Yes, Solas said. Of course, for the better, infinitely better.
How do you know?
Solas paused.
What about the people? Lavellan said. The elves now, the ones living in the clans, and the alienages, the slaves, what would happen to them?
They,
and the dwarves, the Kunari, the humans?
Solas let out an exasperated breath.
Don't you see it doesn't matter? None of this is real, Inquisitor. None of this was ever meant to happen.
But it did, Lavellan said.
It has.
She looked down at the glowing orb and then back at him.
Do I matter, Solas? Am I real to you?
Solas stared at her. Fenris could see the agony on his face.
Is there something unique about my spirit?
Lavellan said.
I remember you asked. Maybe you reached a conclusion. Tell me the truth. Am I special? Am I different?
Solas's voice shook.
I don't know.
Lavellan looked at him until he looked away.
Yes, you do, she said sadly.
The gleam of the awakened orb winked out in her hands. Fenris could no longer feel the terrible power it held. Lavellan looked at him.
Thank you, she said.
Fenris nodded, once.
No, said Solas.
Fenris was expecting it. He was not the only one. A crossbow bolt whistled past Solus's right ear, and a blast of fire dissipated on his sudden shield as he lunged at Llewellyn, snatched away the orb. Fenris saw the look of pure shock flash over her face when he shouldered her out of the way of her lover's assault, only an instant too late. The three of them had expected it. She had not. Fenris turned to face him, this mage who had made himself a god, who in the pride of his power had then broken a long-ago world. Solus bared his teeth. The stolen orb was already starting to glitter in his hands.
"Those markings are an abomination," he said. "You should have let me set you free."
"I already freed myself," Fenris did not bother to say. Solus was better prepared for his attack this time. If Fenris had been seeking to overpower him, he would have failed. But he did not waste his time. Not against this foe. He only forced his ghostly hands through and around Solus's and held on. Their hands were interlocked around the orb. Fenris's wrists forced through Solus's. The magic of the thing pulsing and growing between them. Solus could extend the power of his markings to things he touched. It was how he kept his weapons, his armor, when he ghosted. Solus snarled as he tried to pull the orb away, and a spell like nothing Fenris had ever felt moved around them both, pinning, canceling. Fenris felt the magic in his markings flicker and die. For all but those which kept his wrists ghostly where they were interlaced with Solus's flesh and bone. He was trapped. They both were. He met the mage's eyes and saw the sweat beating on his forehead. Even for him, this was no easy witchcraft. Fenris took a deep breath, braced both feet, and pulled. They were already barely balanced. The sudden movement sent them both crashing to the ground. Solus hung doggedly to the orb as they rolled, tangled together. His face was twisted in a grimace of effort. The spell which canceled the markings was clearly taking almost all he had, and a glinting barrier that shrugged off crossbow bolts and fireballs were taking the rest. He could do no more to defend himself, not without letting go of his prize. No more could Fenris, of course, but he did not need to. He locked his thighs around Solus's hips, rolled them over, got a bare glimpse of his furious expression and already broken nose, and then, in quick succession, he jabbed an elbow into Solus's belly and headbutted him hard in the face. The mage gasped, his fingers flexed unconsciously. The orb flew from both their sweaty grasps, and in the moment of shock that followed, Solus lost control of his entangling counterspell, and Fenris was able to pull away from their macabre double hold. He threw himself back onto his feet, prepared to run after the rolling orb. He saw Llewellyn grasp for it, Varric and Hawk both turn after it, and then the golden mosaic cracked and shuddered. Tiny, bright tiles buckling. One thin strip of the revealed ground beneath reshaped itself into a smooth, stony slope, along which the orb rolled cheerfully straight into Meryl's waiting hands. She straightened up and looked at all of them with wide, guileless eyes. "Meryl," said Hawk warningly.
"We could learn so much from this,"
Meryl said. The white light of magic was around her hands. She was feeding it into the orb. Fenris despaired. Llewellyn had listened to reason, but Meryl never listened to anyone, and Hawk and Varric would not be so quick to attack her. Solus got slowly and painfully to his feet.
"There is so much I could teach you, Hauran," he said. "There is much you do not understand."
Meryl cocked her head.
"But I do, you know," she said. "Understand, I mean. I really do. The half-truths of the Dalish." "Oh no, not that. You," said Meryl. "I understand you."
A brief pause.
"That is impossible," Solus said.
"But I do," said Meryl.
"How could you possibly understand me?"
Meryl said.
"I made a choice, and I was the only one who didn't pay for it."
Solus opened his mouth, and no sound came out. Fenris stared at her. She was small and disheveled, and she looked exhausted. She met no one's eyes. Her voice shook, but there was steel in her.
They all died. My whole clan died because of me, she said. I was so sure. I was so stupid. If I could put it right, I would do anything. I would do anything.
She swallowed.
Except, I think sometimes maybe you shouldn't do anything. I mean, not that, not don't do anything, but there are some things you shouldn't do.
Solas seemed to pull himself together.
You know nothing of. I think, maybe, when you choose something, you choose what comes afterwards as well, said Meryl. Even if it's terrible, you chose it. You chose. You have to live with it. Or else you learn nothing. I would do anything to undo what I did. But I did it. I learned.
She looked at the orb again.
We could learn so much from this, she repeated sadly.
White light spiderwebbed between her fingers, arced around them, arced around the orb. Its strange alphabets lit up in bright colors and faded again. The light grew, running twisted threads across the ancient surface. Some of the patterns it formed were familiar to Fenris. They were the patterns on his own hands. Then they fell apart, and as they did, the orb cracked. It was a soundless destruction. Meryl brought her joined hands apart, and each hand held a fragile, jagged half. It was hollow. Fenris had not expected that, had felt the weight of the thing too often for that. But there was nothing inside, and now it was broken. He could sense nothing of the magic it had borne. No sign of that deep secret wellspring of power. Solas made a low, painful sound that was not a word.
I'm sorry, Harellan, said Meryl,
and she dropped the broken pieces on the golden mosaic floor. There was quiet. Varric broke it. He had lowered his crossbow.
You know, Chuckles,
he said, gently of all things. But then Varric had traveled with this man, called him comrade.
This is just a suggestion, and Maker knows I don't have a lot of experience with God of a Dead Empire as a lifestyle choice. But have you ever considered that instead of focusing on everything you've lost, it might be worth taking a good long look at what you've got?
Silence. Varric barreled on.
It's not so bad, this world. Sure, it's not perfect, but we get by. Most of the time, we even enjoy ourselves. Right, Hawk?
Reality has its moments, Hawk said.
I'd say it's worth it.
He gave Fenris a sideways look, a little smile. Fenris tried not to react too obviously to the implication. Hawk's smile broadened and his ears turned red, so he had not succeeded. Solas only stared blindly at the broken orb. Llewellyn said tentatively,
Solas?
Then he turned. Then he looked at her. Llewellyn faltered before that look. Fenris saw it too, the wild misery in Solas's eyes. It was the rage and despair of a trapped beast, or else the helplessness of a drowning man. It was a look Fenris had worn himself. It was a look he had seen Anders wear in the last weeks before he started a war. Solas's mouth worked, but he said nothing. Everything was very still. The seven still statues looked down blindly on the scene, all unaware. Somewhere behind those seven mirrors, Fenris thought abruptly, were the statues' originals. Seven more elves like Solas, his kinsmen and friends, eternally imprisoned for his mistake. Llewellyn held out her hand.
Mavenen, she said, if you want me.
I do, Solas whispered. He swallowed hard. I cannot. Magic bloomed around him suddenly, and then he was gone, transformed. It took Fenris a moment to comprehend the beast that had appeared in his place. It was a wolf, but no ordinary wolf. It was gigantic, long-legged, heavy-set, larger than any natural beast, ghostly pale. A creature out of nightmares that seemed barely contained by the canine shape.
Its claws looked fierce, its jaw deadly. But before Fenris could think of attack and defense, it took a running leap towards the stairway, past the great wolf statue that was itself, and was gone. He ran after it, felt Hawk beside him, and reached the top of the steps just in time to see the wolf's tail disappear through one of the countless mirrors that littered this place. The mirror cracked behind it, glass shattering into pieces, frame collapsing. There would be no repair for this. The others drew up around him, Hawk and Varric and Merrill all staring at the twisted remains of the mirror. Llewellyn was there on his left, breathing hard, silent. "Gone," said Fenris, "and we have no way to follow." It was a subdued group that passed back through Merrill's alluvian and into her home.
"Is there any way to lock that thing, Merrill?" said Hawk.
"I'll think of something,"
Merrill said.
Fenris shuddered at the thought of what was possible. The mirror could lead anywhere. Anything might come through. Tarly was still unconscious, though there was more color in his face now. Perhaps they should have gone back to the keep, spoken to Aveline, allowed Llewellyn to report to her advisors on what had happened. No one seemed inclined to do so. Llewellyn was very quiet. Fenris carried Tarly to Merrill's bed, and Merrill checked him over, and seemed satisfied. Then there was nothing to do, but no one wanted to go. They were all trying not to turn their backs on the dark mirror in the corner.
"I'm sorry it's such a mess in here,"
Merrill said, though her house was no worse than usual if you discounted the signs of battle.
"It's always a mess in here, Merrill," said Hawk. "Don't worry, we're used to it."
"But you should all be able to sit in chairs, at least."
"It hardly matters," said Fenris. He made his point by sitting down on the floor by the fire. After a moment, Hawk dropped down beside him and leaned their shoulders together. The flames were warm on Fenris's back, and Hawk's body was warm all the way down his side.
"Well, if you're... Oh, by the Dreadwolf!"
Merrill darted over and rescued some ragged books from a chair that Llewellyn was about to sit in.
"I'm so sorry, I..."
Llewellyn put her hand over her mouth. A sound escaped her, low and choked. Merrill reached out. Llewellyn twisted away, dropped into the chair, and buried her face in her hands, shaking.
"Inquisitor," said Varric, concerned.
Llewellyn looked up, and she was not weeping. She was laughing. She laughed dreadfully, wild-eyed, helpless. And then she swallowed hard and said,
By the Dreadwolf!
Before she went off into unhappy hysterics again.
"Oh,"
said Merrill faintly.
"Oh, dear."
She paused.
"And I think I said it in front of him as well. Oh, dear. I hope he wasn't embarrassed." "I should have known," said Llewellyn. "I should have known. I should have known. I'm so stupid."
"Well, I know my first thought when I meet a stranger is always whether they might secretly be a demigod,"
said Varric.
"Or at least it will be now. What's next? Paragon Idukin striding out from the deep roads? Andraste comes back to pay us all a visit?"
Llewellyn said nothing.
"Come on, Inquisitor," said Varric. "I'm not that up on my elven legends, but Fenarel's the trickster, right? It's a pretty good bet he's had a lot of practice telling lies. How are you supposed to know?"
"I should have known,"
Llewellyn said again. And then she did start to cry. Merrill went and knelt by her chair and took her hands. Varric kept talking. It was uncomfortable to watch all that calm control finally break. Fenris did not think he should be seeing it. He quietly stood and pulled Hawk to his feet behind him. It was a cool Kirkwall night outside. The alienage was empty, washed in silver light. The moon was high. The sky was clear, but for the smoke still rising from the foundry district on the other side of Lowtown. Fenris did not think they had been in the place behind the mirrors all that long. though it had felt like an age. Hawk stood behind him and hooked both arms around his shoulders. After a moment, Fenris leaned back, resigning himself, and Hawk rested his chin against the side of Fenris's head. "You are not that much taller than me," Fenris said waspishly. He felt movement in Hawk's belly as he chuckled. The laugh ended with a sigh, warm breath against Fenris's ear.
"I've been stupid," Hawk said.
"That was never in doubt." Another warm huff of laughter, like the dragon shape's hot breath.
"Thanks."
"I do not love you for your brains," Fenris said, "which is fortunate for you." Hawk laughed some more. Fenris reached for one of his hands. Hawk entwined their fingers. It was an awkward position, leaning against him, reaching back. Fine threads of stray magic thrilled against Fenris's markings. He felt no inclination to move.
"Do you know what I was thinking in there?" Hawk said, and then answered his own question. "Idiot! Coward! When you're lucky enough to have something, to have someone, you don't just give up. You don't run away."
Fenris held his hand a little tighter.
"I've been stupid," Hawk said again. "I'm sorry."
"I know," Fenris said. Hawk twisted a little to kiss where he could reach. Fenris felt the brief, warm press and prickle of lips and beard high on his cheekbone. They were quiet for a while. The moon moved across the sky. Inside the alienage hovel, Meryl and Varric were comforting one of the most powerful women in Thedas, a woman who was not that much older than Meryl's apprentices. Said Hawk eventually.
"What is it?"
Never mind.
Fenris pulled away from their embrace.
"What?"
Hawk looked fidgety and suspicious, but said nothing. Fenris folded his arms and raised one eyebrow.
"You don't have to," Hawk said. "I mean, I'd like it if, but I understand if you don't. I don't want to."
"Hawk," said Fenris. "What are you talking about?"
Hawk reached into his shirt and brought out a scrap of ragged cloth. In the washed-out moonlight, it was hard to see the color. Fenris did not need to see it to know. He knew it already, just as he knew every tear and fray in that piece of cloth. The hole once ripped by the spike of a careless gauntlet, the unraveling thread at one end he had to force himself not to pick at. He had worn it for years, even when he had believed there was no hope and no future for them. He had worn it freely, proudly, until the day at the crossroads outside Wycombe when Hawk had demanded it back.
"You kept it," he said.
Hawk began to answer. "Of course I..." Fenris was barely listening. He stepped forward and forward again, their bodies so close there was barely a space left between them. He snatched the cloth from Hawk's uncertain, unresisting hand. Hawk stopped talking. Fenris wrapped the red favor three times around his wrist. He used his teeth to hold the knot in place as he fastened it. Hawk was just staring at him now. Fenris favored him with a glare.
"Right," said Hawk faintly.
The moonlight just revealed the slight darkening flush on his cheeks.
"So you do want it back, then?"
"You are an idiot,"
Fenris informed him, and he kissed Hawk's blooming smile. They kissed for some time under the eaves of Meryl's hovel, and Hawk had begun breathing hot suggestions between kisses.
"My place, no. Yours, no. Demon, hangman?"
Gasping all the while as Fenris nuzzled at his throat and licked and bit the soft skin beneath his jaw. Fenris might even have let himself be persuaded by one of the suggestions. They could hardly stand out here forever, pleasant as it was to be kissing Hawk under the Kirkwall moon. Only a few feet away from the spot where they had first met. But they were interrupted. Llewellyn came out of the hovel, Varric at her side, Meryl behind them in the doorway. Her face was blotched and tear-stained, but she seemed to have regained some measure of her calm. Hawk and Fenris pulled apart as she turned to them,
There should be rooms for both of you at the keep, she said.
She smiled, impish.
Or a room, if you prefer. And I need to wake up my advisors. Shall we?
I take it something's up, said Hawk. Llewellyn nodded.
He won't stop, she said. I know him. He can't stop. Not now.
So the Inquisition stopping an ancient mage, monster, god, whatever the hell Solas is, before he destroys the world,
said Varric.
Again. Must be Tuesday.
I need to look after Tarly, said Meryl.
Then I'll come and help, I promise, as soon as I can.
Will you join us?
Llewellyn said. She said it to both of them, but she was looking at Fenris. Hawk's hand slipped into his, thumb brushing against the wrapped cloth of the favor. He did not speak. He was letting Fenris give their answer. Fenris said, yes. The end.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and on the original fic. You can find the podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening! The music used in this podfic is the Dragon Age 2 main theme by Enon Zur. Reader's note. This podfic is dedicated, and should be on AO3 at least, gifted to Polly Repeat. Polly is a good friend of mine, but we somehow always manage to be in different fandoms, or if we manage to be in the same fandom, be in wildly different parts of the fandom and just never, ever, like the same things, basically. For example, I believe we were both in, Star Trek fandom at the same time, and I was all very happy to talk about Star Trek, except that Polly was a pretty staunch Kirk McCoy shipper, and I was a pretty staunch Kirk Spock shipper, and it just didn't work out. So when I found out that Polly was playing Dragon Age, and I love Dragon Age, I was like, yay, Dragon Age! Only it turned out Polly's favorite Dragon Age was Dragon Age 2, and my favorite Dragon Age was Dragon Age Inquisition, and we both kind of hated the other game. So that happened. In any case, at some point in that phase where we were both not really into the other game, Polly did wreck this fic to me at some point of really good Dragon Age 2 fic that, you know, had some Inquisition characters in it. It was like about half about some Inquisition characters. I was like, okay, and I clicked on it, and of course it was Solas Llewellyn, which is just one of my basically absolute do not want pairings for Inquisition fic. So I didn't read it at the time because fuck no. I didn't want to read an Inquisition. I didn't want to read a Solas Llewellyn fic. And then I went and played Dragon Age 2 again, and I loved it, and then I was looking for good fic, obviously, and I had this one in the back of my mind as, okay, I really should read it, and it took me forever to actually click on it and read it, and then I did, and oh my gosh, I knew basically instantly that I wanted to podfic it. I think this is possibly the only Lavellan Solis fic that I could ever read. Definitely, I can only read ones with this particular dynamic, which is really great, which is Lavellan being into it. Well, first off, them not being like the focus, like not being a POV. And then them, like him being a jerk, like an absolute asshole about things, and not like, and holding his, you know, perfect historical world over, like, caring about that way more than her, and her basically going, fuck you, eventually. I'm pretty sure that's the only way I could do it. That is to say, thank you, Polly. I'm so happy we're even vaguely in the same fandom now. And thank you for wrecking me this amazing, amazing story. The one I have at home, Meryl said. Oh my gosh. Ah, this is great. Okay, so feelings. My feelings towards Solis are not great. And honestly, what kept me from reading this fic before I did was that it is labeled Lavellan Solis. And that is just not my pairing at all whatsoever. And yet, this fic does it so right. So right. And this particular section where Solis is like, you need an Arlen home. And Meryl's like, yeah, I got one. I like put it in a drawer somewhere. And he's like, what? It has to be an imitation. And she's like, if it is an imitation, it's a good one. Like, I don't think it is, but it's a good, if it is, it's a good one because I used it to repair an alluvion. He's like, and what alluvion? What? And she's like, yeah, I have one at home. And it's just like Meryl collecting ancient elven artifacts and Solis being just so like, what? It's the best, the absolute best, the best treatment of Solis. So unprepared to deal with Meryl. Oh, I love her so much. There was one door at the top. I need to not actually be this bassy. Yeah, so if you notice that at some point in chapter 5 or 6 or something, my Fenris narration gets a little higher. Or if you notice that I start out really low and then get higher towards the end of chapters. Yeah, that's because I start out really bassy and then, yeah, no. I can't do that. Fucking Solis. Like, oh. You gotta... Ugh. Oh.